The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. At daybreak he appeared in the temple again, and as all the people came to him, he sat down and began to teach them. The scribes and Pharisees brought a woman along who had been caught committing adultery. And making her stand there in full view of everybody, they said to Jesus, "Master, this woman was caught in the very act of committing adultery, and Moses has ordered us in the law to condemn women like this to death by stoning. What have you to say?" They asked him this as a test, looking for something to use against him. But Jesus bent down and started writing on the ground with his finger. As they persisted with their question, he looked up and said, "If there is one of you who has not sinned, let him be the first to throw a stone at her." Then he bent down and wrote on the ground again. When they heard this, they went away, one by one, beginning with the eldest, until Jesus was left alone with the woman, who remained standing there. He looked up and said, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?"
"No one, sir," she replied.
"Neither do I condemn you," said Jesus. "Go away and don't sin any more." The Gospel of the Lord. I remember on one occasion some years ago, someone was taking great delight in telling me about some scare story in a certain tabloid newspaper. I think they expected me to join in with agreeing with them on the issue in question, but they weren't to know that scare stories in newspapers tend not to impress me. This is partly because I don't always believe very much of what I read in the press, and partly because the news media is so intent on blowing up stories and judging people, falsely wanting us to believe that everything in life is clear-cut and straightforward, black and white, as it were. As a priest with several years' experience, I know just how far from reality of life this approach is. Life is not all black and white. To believe that everything in life is so clear-cut and straightforward, with no grey areas to confuse the issue, is, I would put to you, naive and immature. This is why religious fundamentalists and political extremists, such as fascists, fall down very badly. They are naive and immature in outlook, because everything is too neatly compartmentalized. That's a big word. Admittedly, such an approach seems attractive in one sense because there is no complication. So, for example, Hitler was able to believe and teach that some races were superior to others, that people of certain racial descent, such as the Jews, were unfit to live and should be thrown into concentration camps. He applied the same philosophy to the disabled, defectives, as they were known. He had homosexual men, gypsies, communists, Jews, and all sorts of other people thrown into concentration camps, all because they didn't fit neatly into one box or another. In our own time, the same can be said of the extreme Islamic fundamentalists. Anyone unfortunate enough to live in a place controlled by the so-called Islamic State who contravenes some petty rule. I was reading the other day that men's trousers must not be too long. There should be some ankle showing, and if it's not, then you are punished. A similar kind of black and white thinking applies to religious matters by those of a Christian fundamentalist bent. Such people are very good at deciding who is saved and who is not. For an extreme Christian fundamentalist, if it's written in the Bible, it must be taken literally word for word. So if you are thinking of going out and gathering sticks on the Sabbath, watch out. Someone out there may be of a mind to take the book of Leviticus literally, which says, "You shall stone to death anyone found collecting sticks on the Sabbath." For the Jews who lived at the time of Jesus, the Mosaic law was very clear. For example, a woman caught committing adultery was to be stoned to death. Judgment and punishment dominated over forgiveness and mercy. Due to the patriarchal nature of the society, the same punishment did not apply to the man because the woman was seen as inferior and treated as the possession of the man. This understanding of relationships between men and women is, of course, scandalous to us today, but sadly still reflects the attitudes of some towards women. The action of Jesus towards the woman in the gospel story is dramatic because, apart from anything else, it turns the whole custom of the law upside down. Jesus forgives the sin of the woman, and he tells those who surround her not to judge her in the old way. She is given a new start. They are given a new start, actually, because as they turn away one by one, they are being made to rethink themselves. So there's conversion even for those who are accusing her. So everyone in the story really is given that second chance for a new start. And in his action, Jesus affirms and restores the woman's dignity. He makes a statement about the equality of woman and man in the action. He also places the focus on forgiveness and mercy rather than on judgment and condemnation. If we combine this story with the answer to the question, how many times must I forgive my brother, we hear Jesus saying, not 7 times, but 77 times. In other words, as many times as it takes, an infinite number. It shows that forgiveness is always waiting as a gift from God. The newness of life offered to the repentant sinner is a cause for celebration. And in the church, we have the wonderful sacrament of reconciliation in which we can come and confess our sins and find that loving mercy and forgiveness that God has on offer for us. The church, in her wisdom, has always recognized that we cannot judge other people. Judgment is to be left to God and to God alone. For this reason, whilst we can name certain actions as being wrong, no one, not even a priest, can judge the fault or culpability of the person who does the wrong. The church has always taught that mortal sin, which cuts us off from God, can only occur when a person freely and with knowledge commits a seriously wrong action. We are all complex beings. There is a degree of mystery about every one of us. And the mystery of the other person means that no one except God can see the freedom or the knowledge of each person. We cannot say that any particular person does not enjoy God's love and is therefore totally alienated from God and therefore destined for hell. That choice is indeed a possibility because we are free agents, but only God can judge that inner freedom. Newspaper reports constantly detail the most horrific crimes, as do our television screens, including child abuse, murder, violence, some of which is quite extreme and outrageous. There are many crimes which cause us to feel outraged and which provoke an angry reaction, and rightly so. Whilst we must name these actions as wrong, and we must protect people, especially children, from them, at the same time, we cannot make a judgment about any person's relationship with God. That is between them and God. Whether they are mad, bad, or sad, it is for God to judge, not for us, tempting though it often is. Yes, in the interests of administering justice and in needing to protect others, we need to send some people to prison or to hospital. But it is still a duty for the Christian community to avoid jumping on the bandwagon and indulging in being judgmental, simply because we're not qualified to do so. It may make us feel good, just because, you know, I'm not like that. And when you think to yourself, I'm not like that, isn't it easy just to put them down? It's a kind of pride and sense of superiority. That's why it's wrong to judge. And it's rife. Judgmentalism is rife in society today. And often that judgment is coloured by our personal prejudices and opinions, just as Hitler's actions were coloured by his. The gospel reading we have heard this evening is a sober reminder that we must be so careful about labelling people or deciding how they stand in relationship with God. Certainly, wrong, bad, and dangerous actions must be condemned, must be appropriately dealt with. But we have to hold on to what I've said, that people are complex, and rarely is life straightforward or clear-cut. So to finish, I'll quote the old chestnut, shall I? People who live in glass houses cannot afford to throw stones. We all do it, of course. I often take that to confession. But next time you're tempted to throw a stone, just stop for a moment and consider how many of your windows you are putting in danger.